It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Sandy Rios with you this morning on this Thursday, and I just wanted to start with some news that is not necessarily recorded by some anchor somewhere. This was sent to me by someone in Great Britain. And I heard this morning from an insider there that Boris Johnson, the prime minister, is improving. And so I don't know if that's going to be on the news, but I'm just telling you. And this also I heard from someone who attends church in Great Britain. We've just heard from a friend of the family saying that the doctor overseeing the prime minister's care as the chief consultant in critical care at St. Thomas Hospital. He is a godly believer and attends Spurgeon's Tabernacle. He's asked for prayer that he will have an opportunity to talk to Boris Johnson about his soul and that he might lead him to the Lord. Please join us in prayer. And so I just wanted to tell you, the thing that strikes me about that is how God does not, like I said, before the left ever thought about it, God has never wasted a crisis. He's never wasted a crisis. And so would you join me and let's just pray for this, again, the chief consultant in critical care at St. Thomas's Hospital, who's asked for prayer as he tries to bring Boris Johnson back to good health. Why does that matter to us? It matters to us because Boris Johnson is an ally in the freedom, the desire to have the British people be free from the bonds of the European Union's draconian rules. Just freedom for his people. And right now, the British people, according to Katie Hopkins yesterday, are pretty much cowed just the same way the American people seem to be right now. Not even comprehending what they are giving up in the guise of fighting something that might kill them or their neighbors. And not able to strike the balance there, just willingly subjecting themselves to government rules. And we'll talk about that more in a minute. Some more good news. I thought this was great news. Rand Paul is not only recovered. They said, we found out earlier this week, he was, of course, diagnosed, or he came out positive for coronavirus, COVID-19. But he has, it was a mild case. I don't even know that he had symptoms, but he was a person in great danger because he had lost a lung from the attack of his leftist neighbor from behind him. Remember, he lost a lung. It was a horrible situation for which the neighbor, I think, got, 10 days in jail or something like that. It was just amazing. And they never really, Rand Paul never got justice in that situation. But he is now volunteering at a hospital after recovering from coronavirus. He's volunteering at TriStar Greenview Regional Hospital in Bowling Green, Kentucky. And the hospital CEO, Mike Sherrod, told the Associated Press that the senator is lifting the spirits of patients and our colleagues. Isn't that something? And so that was just a bit of good news I wanted to share with you before we start today's, likely. That is some good news. There really is good news. In fact, I should start with Dr. Fauci's announcement last night about the numbers going down. This is clip 3.
The number of deaths on a given day continue to increase. At the same time, seemingly paradoxically, but not, we're saying that we're starting to see some glimmers of hope. Because the deaths generally lag by a couple of weeks behind what's fueling the outbreak, namely the number of new cases and the number of hospitalizations. So at the same time as we're seeing an increase in death, like typically what we're seeing now from New York over the last few days, there's been a stabilization and a decrease in the hospitalizations, admissions to intensive care, and the requirements for intubations. That means that as we get further on beyond this week, we should start to see the beginning of a turnaround, which is a good sign. So, it's very sobering to see the increase in deaths. And we predicted over the weekend that this would really be a bad week. And it is. It's going to be a bad week for deaths. But driving that and ahead of that is the fact that we're going to start to see the beginning of a turnaround. So we need to keep pushing on the mitigation strategies, because there's no doubt that that's having a positive impact on the dynamics of the outbreak.
All right. There's something very important I want to share with you in the midst of this, and I want to try to be as clear as I possibly can. Let me just kind of frame it this way. Fox came out with a poll this morning. They're reporting on a poll by Monmouth University. The bottom line is that the approval of Trump's job combating coronavirus is fading. And so they give the numbers in the poll. And of course, remember that, if I had the time, I'd go into the poll, who they polled, where they were. Was it people in New York that were polled? And were there people in the middle of the country? Were there people from South Dakota where there's hardly any deaths? Who was polled? We don't know. Because generally speaking, they want to prove a point. And so the other point that they make in this is that in another poll, by contrast, Dr. Anthony Fauci, the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, earned a 78% approval rating. So Dr. Fauci, because he's been on television every day, has kind of become a rock star, and so is Deborah Birx. I want to make a point here with you about why I think that's not a good thing. Dr. Fauci was on with Ed Henry yesterday, I believe it was, and I want you to hear the back and forth. Ed asks him some really serious questions about the modeling, which I've been talking about a lot, how the modeling has been so off the mark. Now, I'll just let Ed ask the questions, and then I have some really serious comments and observations that I want to share with you when he finishes. Here it is, clip 4.
All right, Dr. Fauci, you say it's not the time to pull back, but there was some breaking news overnight. The Washington Post and others are citing that could be significant. The University of Washington model that you and the president and others have cited now says that they're predicting about 60,000 U.S. deaths by the beginning of August. That's tragic. That's awful. It's still a number that's far too high. But as you know, that's down in the last week from a model that said 94,000 deaths, then 82,000 deaths, now down to 60,400 deaths. How significant is that, number one? And do you think it's because of the social distancing measures?
There's no doubt in my mind it's because of the social distancing. And I think people need to understand, as I've always said time and time again at press briefings, when you have models that project what the number of deaths are going to be or the number of hospitalizations, a model is as good as the assumptions that you put into the model. And when the assumptions are sometimes a little bit off, tweaked a little bit, you can get numbers that are far different than what the reality is. The thing that Trump's models is real data. And as we continue to accumulate real data, you go back and modify the models. So that's the explanation for what you just said. Mm-hmm. Although one of the original models projected a 100,000 to 200,000 deaths, as we're getting more data and seeing the positive effect of mitigation, those numbers are going to be downgraded, as you've said. I don't know exactly what the numbers are going to be, but right now it looks like it's going to be less than the original projection.
So, oh yes, okay, so Dr. Fauci presented, and Deborah Birx, these projections. And they did this, a month ago? That 100 to 2,000 people were going to die, by the end of the summer, as I recall, or by fall. And based on that, America sort of panicked. The president listed because he trusted them. We shut down everything. 10 million Americans have lost their jobs. Our children are not going to school. Weddings have been canceled. People cannot get medical care because the hospitals are not able to do any kind of procedures that are not COVID-related. Even rural hospitals are shutting down. Some, I've heard, many of them are going to have to close their doors in smaller communities because they can't survive financially. Let's see, there might be some other downsides of that, but that just gives you an idea of what we have done in response to the models. And now Dr. Fauci says, the models are only as good as what you put in them. So, and then he says, but it is the mitigation, it is the fact that you are locked down in your house and you can't go to a restaurant, you're not going to school, and you're calling off your weddings and you can't get medical, it's because you're wearing masks and because you're staying 6 feet apart. He says there is no doubt. There's no doubt. He said it in the opening clip, and he said it in the clip with Ed Henry right now. There's no doubt in my mind. There is no doubt in my mind. The reason these numbers have come down is because you have been social distancing. There's no doubt in my mind. That's the reason these numbers have come down. Now, I want to contrast that with a conversation he had with John Roberts. I think this is the one I've heard him say this in more than one interview. But he's asked about the effects of hydroxychloroquine. He's asked about the effects of that because President Trump has, from the very beginning, said that he is very optimistic. He has not said everybody must get on hydroxychloroquine. He's just said, based on what we're reading, we think hydroxychloroquine has been very effective. But Dr. Fauci, at every turn, has said, "Oh no, we're not, no, we can't be sure about that. No, we can't be sure about that because we've had no clinical studies." We've had no double-blind studies. We can't be sure about that. In fact, I'll let you hear him say, I believe this is the clip six. Let's listen.
Hydroxychloroquine, this potential therapy for people who are infected with coronavirus. Is there any evidence to suggest that, as with malaria, it might be used as a prophylaxis against COVID-19?
No, the answer is no. And the evidence that you're talking about, John, is anecdotal evidence. So as the commissioner of FDA and the president mentioned yesterday, we're trying to strike a balance between making something with a potential of an effect to the American people available at the same time that we do it under the auspices of a protocol that will give us information to determine if it's truly safe and truly effective. But the information that you're referring to specifically is anecdotal. It was not done in a controlled clinical trial, so you really can't make any definitive statement about it.
Okay, so now let's think about this. There is no doubt that you staying home and quarantining yourself and staying 6 feet apart and all the other rules that we have adapted, there's no doubt that that has been the reason that these numbers have fallen. But hydroxychloroquine has now been given. In fact, I heard in another report, I think almost all medical professionals in New York City are taking hydroxychloroquine. Patients are being given that right now, even as we speak, even though the Governor Cuomo was very slow to come to that. We're hearing reports from all over the world that it's been very effective. That's the fight that was in the Situation Room last Saturday between Peter Navarro and Dr. Fauci, because Peter Navarro handed him a stack of stories from around the globe of the effectiveness of hydroxychloroquine. And so he continues to say in public, there are no studies. There's no double-blind studies. There's no scientific evidence. But here's the deal. There have been no studies or scientific evidence or double-blind studies to show that social distancing or quarantining is stopping this. That is completely anecdotal. He's fully willing to embrace that because that was his idea. That's what he and Deborah Birx were pushing. And so he wants to take the credit for the numbers coming down, but he wants to say repeatedly that because there are no studies, because there's no scientific evidence, this is just anecdotal. Hydroxychloroquine has, you know, we can't say. We just can't say. But we can say, without any kind of evidence, scientific or any studies, that social distancing and shutting down the economy at this great price, why, yes, that's the reason. He cannot know that. And that, to me, is a complete and total red flag about his judgment. And you add to that the fact that he's tied into Bill Gates. Bill Gates wants and is rapidly trying to fund a vaccine for COVID-19. But here's the problem. What they're leading to, and out of Bill Gates' own mouth have admitted to, is they want to give a certificate to everyone that has had the vaccine, and not cured from it, but anyone who has the vaccine, and that would affect your employment, that would affect your ability to go to school, your ability to work. You'd have to have that vaccine. You would be forced to have the vaccine and carry a certificate. This is very dangerous. The Attorney General was on with Laura Ingraham last night and said the same. He is not comfortable with that. That's an understatement of the century. So I'm just trying to alert you to the dangers that we are facing here that have nothing to do with this virus or this disease, COVID-19. I'll be right back. Sandy Rios in the morning.
Here's Dan Steiner, president of Preborn, a ministry dedicated to helping save preborn babies from abortion through ultrasound.
I sense God's broken heart over the issue of abortion. You see, he sees every little baby that's being formed in the mother's womb, and it breaks his heart to see when the lifetime that he has planned for them is taken from them violently so often.
Preborn is the direct competition to Planned Parenthood. By letting a mother see her baby on ultrasound and hear her baby's heartbeat, she'll choose life 80% of the time. For $140, you can sponsor 5 ultrasounds, and you'll receive a story and a picture of babies whose lives were spared. To donate, dial pound 250 and say the keyword baby. That's pound 250 and say baby. Or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com. Your love can save a life.
This is Pause to Pray, a chance to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today, we pray for Christina Harder, Executive Director of the President's Council on Sports, Fitness, and Nutrition. Her office is promoting healthy lifestyle activities, especially during times of home quarantine. 1 Corinthians 6, verses 19 and 20 reminds us of the importance of caring for ourselves. Do you not know that your bodies are temples of the Holy Spirit, who is in you, whom you have received from God? You are not your own. You were bought at a price. Therefore, honor God with your bodies. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask for guidance for Christina Harder as she promotes healthy lifestyles in this country. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team, a nonprofit, nonpartisan ministry dedicated to encouraging prayer for our nation's leaders. To learn more, go to pausetopray.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. I need you to do something right now, folks. Text pound 250 with the keyword baby. We are in a crisis point in American history, and there is growing concern that the nation's abortion rate is about to explode. So I need your help right now to save the life of an unborn child. And that's why I'm partnering with Preborn, an organization equipping pregnancy centers with ultrasound machines. 80% of women who have an ultrasound save their child. So get on your phone right now. Text pound 250 with the keyword baby. Text pound 250 with the keyword baby. The San Diego County Sheriff's Department is leading a massive crackdown on citizens who are violating the state's social distancing order. Citations were handed out to a number of people parked in cars near the beach, an apparent no-no these days in communist California. The Sheriff's Department says the stay-at-home order is not a recommendation. It's an order enforceable by a $1,000 fine and up to 6 months in jail. It's as if San Diego's been turned into some sort of East German police state. By the way, the deputies wearing brown shirts. Citizens are basically being told if you step foot off your lawn, you could very well go to jail. Meanwhile, across the entire state, they are literally letting convicted criminals out of jail. At the very least, Californians are getting a taste of what it's like to live in a socialist state. As always, let not your heart be troubled, America. Be prudent, but don't panic. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
As we all know, the majority of the resources have been sent to the coastlines, but now the middle of the country is starting to feel the effects of COVID-19. A new study by the Harvard Global Health Institute projects nearly 290,000 people in Kansas and Missouri could be in the hospital from the virus, and that's just not enough beds for that many people. Of course, this study is if people in Kansas and the Show Me State do not follow those social distancing and stay-at-home guidelines. As of right now, Missouri has seen a little more than 3,300 cases. Kansas sits at around 1,050 cases. And as Easter Sunday approaches, COVID-19 appears to be putting a damper on a lot of the celebrations. The Ohio governor, who is Catholic, has limited gatherings of no more than 10 people, but has made it very clear religious institutions will be exempt from this ban. He did, however, suggest religious leaders exercise different avenues of worship.
We can almost guarantee you that in a church, even not a very large church, there will be people who would test positive, who already have it. They may not know it. And you're really playing with the lives of your congregation.
But then in Kansas, Republican lawmakers revoked the Democratic governor's executive order limiting gatherings to fewer than 10 people. Republicans in the state ruled it an unconstitutional infringement on religious liberty. Take a listen to what the Kansas governor had to say in response.
What it does have is the ability to undermine and inject chaos into our statewide emergency response systems. What it does have is the ability to confuse and frustrate our local emergency management officials who are already stretched far too thin.
All right, that was part of a report on Fox this morning about how the states are responding. Kristi Noem, who was the governor of South Dakota, made a statement yesterday that I think is worth playing. I wish we could play all of it. I don't think we can. But this is Governor Kristi Noem of South Dakota explaining why her state is not closing down. Let's listen. Clip 8.
I wanted to touch on the role of government in a crisis situation. In this country and in our state, we have a government that is run by, for, and of the people. And the people have established national and state constitutions that place specific limits on the role of government in our lives. Those limits prevent us from taking draconian measures, much like the Chinese government has done and what we have seen. There also is some limits that keep us from taking some of the actions we've seen European governments take that limit citizens' rights. Our Constitution ensures the citizens' right is protected. I agree with the role of the government as set forth in our state and in our national constitution. I took an oath to uphold these constitutions. My role in respect to public safety is something that I take very seriously. The people themselves are primarily responsible for their safety. They are the ones that are entrusted with expansive freedoms. They're free to exercise their rights to work, to worship, and to play, or to even stay home, or to conduct social distancing. Since the middle of February, I've been very clear that people need to take personal responsibility for their health and the well-being of their families. They should be practicing good hygiene. They should be washing their hands, practicing social distancing to make sure that we are stopping the spread of this virus in our state. Other than a select few, the work that the people of South Dakota have been doing has been tremendous and has been incredibly effective.
All right, I'm going to interrupt her because she has actually her whole speech is 4 minutes long. It's excellent. But what she's saying is, look, the American way and the constitutional way is that people decide for themselves. So in other words, if you are really, really sick or you're really, really worried, then you just stay home and wear a mask and take precautions. But the state cannot force you. The government cannot force you not to worship. Now, look, I know that this is going to be misunderstood as I'm saying to rebel against this. I'm not saying that. I myself am keeping the rules. I'm just saying, please be mindful that we cannot suspend our rights, our constitutional rights to gather, to free assembly, to free association, the right to worship, to do what we want to do, to be the, you know, guide our own fate, be left alone to do what we think is best in our conscience before God. That doesn't mean you don't obey the rules of the state. You do. The Bible says, according to Romans 13, as Christians, we do obey. But I'm just telling you, don't so easily think about this. Think about this. I think some people are considering this a vacation, kind of fun, not so much pressure, not realizing that we are in the process of feeling the ground shift underneath our feet. For heaven's sake, our Congress even isn't in Washington, and they're passing legislation by voice vote or by just fiat. They're going to be actually releasing, you know, millions more dollars probably today. I'm not saying don't release the dollars. I'm saying what's happened with the process where the duly elected representatives of the people are in town making these choices. It's phone in. It's what do they call it? Unanimous consent, where they're not even having to vote. Our whole structure, our protections that the founding fathers worked so hard to lay down for us to protect us and to make sure that we stayed free, are just being thrown and tossed to the wind so cavalierly. That's what's bothering me. I want to say also, you heard in that Fox report earlier that it's talking about 200,000 people projected to I don't know if it was a death or deaths or if it was, you know, diagnosed with COVID-19. I can't recall, to be honest with you. But I want to point something out very important. We're hearing from all kinds of sources that COVID-19 is being attributed for the deaths of lots of people who are already in hospice for other things, or maybe just have really serious conditions and they develop this. It's like older folks who are so susceptible to death. If they get pneumonia, if they're older and they have other conditions, it's the same principle. And so Dr. Birx actually addressed this yesterday. She said, I think in this country we've taken a very liberal approach to mortality. There are other countries that if you had a pre-existing condition, and let's say the virus caused you to go to the ICU and then have a heart or kidney problem, some countries are recording that as a heart issue or a kidney issue and not a COVID-19 death. The intent is if someone dies with COVID-19, we are counting that as a COVID-19 death. So they're counting a lot of deaths as COVID-19 deaths that are not, in fact, connected to they are not as a result. They were already in process of dying. And that's skewing the numbers. And Daniel Horowitz has an article this morning in which he said hospitals are actually, they have incentives. They get more money if they have more COVID-19 deaths. And so there's all kinds of twisted things going on here that that should make us concerned. And for those of us in the middle of the I was born in the middle of the country, so that's why. So those of us, I'll always be a Heartland person. The numbers that are projected, those are the models again. And you heard Anthony Fauci just say a few minutes ago, those numbers that said 150,000 to 200,000 Americans. Well, you know, they're only just as good as the people that put the data in or what their thoughts are. So in other words, they're really, really, really wildly inaccurate. And we have responded as a nation in such a way that we have crippled our economy and may bring terrible things upon our head, both socially and economically, because of the steps we've taken. And yet we're told that Anthony Fauci has a 78% approval rating and the president, not so much. People are beginning, not to trust what he's doing. So we are being set up for something that really troubles me. I do want to open the phone lines. Our phone number is 888-589-8840, 888-589-8840. You've been hearing that civil liberties are... Actually, I'm not going to go to that. I'll just say to you that a former police officer was arrested in the park in Colorado for throwing a ball with his six-year-old daughter. The park was empty. And yet the police came up and they handcuffed him. He said his daughter kept saying, Daddy, I don't want you to get arrested. And he said to her, honey, no, they're not going to arrest me. We're not doing anything wrong. And yet they did arrest him. They put him in the police car. And it's just the police later apologized. But we're hearing stories like that all over the place. Daniel Horowitz has a whole article sort of listing some of the rights. Maybe you've seen some of this yourself in your own community, and that's part of what we might be talking about if you have stories like that. 888-589-8840. You guys, on my board, it's still locked off. No phone calls coming in, so maybe you need to change that. So I want to read some of the email you've been sending because it's interesting stuff. Let me do something completely different before I go back to COVID-19. I know we're all getting tired of that. By the way, tomorrow we're going to do a show that's all about Jesus and all about the resurrection and all about Good Friday. And I think it's got beautiful music, and I think you will find it refreshing. So I just wanted to give you a heads up on that. This is from Mary Lee. She said she's in Texas visiting her son for the winter, but she lives in Des Moines. She says, I can't get you there, but she enjoys the show. And I just wanted to give you a shout out, Mary Lee. Very sweet. And the other thing is she said her husband is retired from the FBI also, so she feels like family. And she is. But Mary Lee, I just wanted to say to you, you can get this show anywhere, all over the globe. Have your son help you download the AFR Talk app on your smartphone, or get you a smartphone so you can download the AFR app, or get it at your computer if you're more comfortable with a computer. And you can listen wherever you are, anytime. And listen, thanks so much for listening. Very, very kind of you. This is from Matt. Matt is from Washington State. He said, I want to bring your attention to a sex education bill that was just signed into law on Friday. That's a week ago, because he sent me this last week and I didn't get to it. I just wanted to bring this to your attention because this bill is not receiving much attention outside of Washington State because of the coronavirus, and the bill is extremely controversial. SB 5395 has been labeled as one of the most progressive sex education bills in the country. The bill mandates sex education to be taught starting in kindergarten and ending in grade 12. Do you want to know who was the champion of that in Illinois, Matt, when he was a senator in Illinois? That was Barack Obama. It's funny because he voted present on most bills. He never recorded a vote. He just voted present. You know, he didn't weigh in. But on sex education for little ones, progressive, as you're describing, offensive, outrageous, he was a champion, man. He was so for this, and he passed it. Some of the worst, most egregious, vulgar sex education for children, even in preschool, was passed because of Barack Obama. But let's go back to Washington State where you are. SB 5395 mandates sex education to be taught starting in kindergarten and ending in grade 12. What's even more disturbing is that the bill includes topics related to sexual touching, contraceptives, LGBT themes, and practices. It not only takes away parental rights, but teaches extremely explicit material at a very young age. It's incredibly unpopular, and on Friday, many people across Washington State pleaded with our governor, Jay Inslee, to veto the bill, but he's expected to pass it. We're deeply concerned about SB 5395. You have quite a few listeners here in the Pacific Northwest, and I hope you can address this. Matt, that's all the time I can give it right in this moment, but I just know it's like a cancer that's spread across the country. But I will tell you, I think it pretty much birthed itself in Illinois under the leadership of Barack Obama. We are living in turbulent, horrible times, and there are reasons for it. It had to do with us being so comfortable and having such blessings from our Heavenly Father, even if we didn't recognize that, of the freedoms and all of the food we could eat and all the drinks of our choice that we could drink and the clothes and the endless merchandise and the videos and just the incredible abundance. And we forgot that we had responsibilities as Christian citizens, and we shirked them. We didn't vote. We gave up. We didn't care who got elected, and we elected horrible people, and they did horrible things, and we're reaping the benefits of that. Darlene, she said she is a pharmacist, and first of all, she's very kind. She does listen. She's being very sweet, but she's a little troubled by how I've been pronouncing hydrochloroquine. And I'm sorry. I am very sorry, Darlene. You're right. I like to get things correct, and I appreciate the correction. She said, I would definitely take this medication if I tested positive without a single second thought. Medications are routinely used off-label 20 to 25% of the time. This drug has been around since 1955. It's used all around the world for malaria, rheumatoid arthritis, and lupus. And she goes through another other things that it's given as off-label. So, Darlene, thank you for that input. And then this is from Paul. He's in Manchester, New Hampshire. Your AFR radio commentary today was both shameless and hateful. Your intentional misinformation by a professed Christian is sinful and sadly evil. If you believe the coronavirus epidemic is a scam, why not volunteer for a week in one of the New York City hospitals? Then come back on AFR and to tell us what an overblown socialist anti-Trump event you still believe it is. Paul, in spite of your attack on me, I actually sense sincerity there, so I'm going to respond to you. Maybe you don't listen often, I don't know. But I don't believe the coronavirus epidemic is a scam. I've never said that. Real people are dying in horrible ways. Certainly in overseas, in Italy and China, it's just horrendous. I have covered all of that. I do believe that the response has been way out of proportion and has proposed and presented much more danger than the coronavirus maybe ever will. I believe people are scamming us on the numbers, the projections, what's happening in the hospitals. I take the case in point. Think of CBS running pictures of an Italian hospital overrun while it's actually New York they're talking about. It would be helpful to me if you told us what's happening in New Hampshire in your own hospital. Seriously, I would really appreciate that. Can you go and let me know if your hospitals in New Hampshire are overflowing with COVID-19 patients? But please be honest with me now, because people from all over the country are letting me know that they're seeing their hospitals empty and not operating. And so that's the reason I've been reporting about that. So, Paul, if you know something different, let me know. I have to take a break. Our phone number is 888-589-8840, 888-589-8840. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. What is the proper role of government? Romans chapter 13 outlines government's function, and it is basically this: to restrain or to punish wickedness and to reward righteousness. Government was never intended to be our savior. Government is our servant. As we focus on our civil occupations and our civic engagement responsibilities, let us never forget that government is not our God. We don't put our trust in it. We put our trust in our Christ. As a result, what we want is a government that stays out of our way and leaves room for our church to do our business of fulfilling the Great Commission.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Feelings like guilt and worry can rob us of joy and distract us from what's really important in life. But gratefully, there's a biblical solution to dealing with these painful emotions. This week on Pathway to Victory, Dr. Robert Jeffress tackles the issues of guilt and worry from a biblical perspective. Join us for the series, Choose Your Attitudes, Change Your Life, all this week on Pathway to Victory.
Weekday mornings at 6 Central on American Family Radio.
Hi, this is Dan Celia from Financial Issues. We as God's people need to be good stewards of all that He has given us. That is so important, and that's what drives me each day as I break down the latest financial numbers and talk to listeners across the country about their use of the money that God has entrusted to them. Join me each morning from 8 to 10 Central and Saturday mornings at 10 o'clock Central Time for Financial Issues right here on American Family Radio.
Brian Fisher here with the Life and Liberty Minute. Late-night comedian Trevor Noah took a poke at Christians the other night, accusing us of being hypocrites for owning guns for our own protection. He seems to think that trusting God and owning guns are mutually exclusive. He said this: "You know, it's funny how these same people say Jesus will protect them are the same people stocking up on guns. But one of the ways God protects us is by giving us what we need to protect ourselves. The Second Amendment enshrines our inalienable, God-given right to use a weapon in defense of our families. Jesus himself told his own disciples to armor up, since there are bad people out there. Let the one who has no sword sell his cloak and buy one." That's Luke 22:36. The biblical way for a Jesus follower to protect his family is with God and a Glock.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Donald Trump has long warned American companies to stop manufacturing in China. Unfortunately, his common sense alarms about depending upon unreliable supply chains largely fell on deaf ears. The Chinese Communist Party virus, however, has made what was necessary now imperative. The fact that we are dependent on the perpetrators of this pandemic for medicine and personal protective equipment has impacted and outraged all of us. Now, President Trump and his team are finally getting help from lots of ingenious and patriotic entrepreneurs committed to Made in America. A case in point is USA Rare Earth Inc., which is developing Round Top Mountain in Texas to help meet our national need for advanced electronics, batteries, and weaponry. With Round Top's help, America will enable the world to defeat Communist China's efforts to monopolize and manipulate such precious metals to our detriment and possibly mortal peril. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. I have a couple of things I want to be sure that I tell you before I go to the phones. Phone number is 888-589-8840. The president now is talking about removing funding from the World Health Organization. Let me just give you an idea of... Yes, our financial interest there. And now I cannot find that piece of paper. But I'm going to tell you this then. I told you the World Health Organization under Tedros has been horrible. They actually sided with China. They caused the world to not prepare for this, even though they should have been on the ground. They should have known what was happening in China. But actually, the leader, the head of the World Health Organization, Tedros, was in the pocket of the Chinese. We could make that case in so many different ways. Just a detail about him, he was with part of the Ethiopian People's Revolutionary Democratic Front. He isn't communist. The Ethiopian people are very connected to the Chinese. Addis Ababa is known as the city that China built. The United States contributes 14.7% of the World Health Organization's $38 billion budget. China only contributes 0.21%. Contributions from the U.S. government, American citizens, and U.S.-based charities make up 76% of all voluntary contributions to the organization, and yet they are in lockstep with China, and that's a deadly situation. So that's kind of the behind-the-scenes information on that. All right, let me go to the phones and talk to you, 888-589-8840. Let's go to Mark in Ohio. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Sandy. I love your show.
Thank you very much. So what's going on?
Okay, my daughter was deployed to Afghanistan in Bagram Air Force Base in the middle of 04 until middle of 05. And the protocol back then was she had to take a hydrochloroquine tablet every day as a malaria prophylactic. Okay, and so there's plenty of data there on soldiers, you know, taking these things, and that went on for the whole year. Now, she says now that they quit that protocol in Afghanistan for whatever reason. I guess it was the side effects became overwhelming or the too many people were having trouble with the side effects. And so I think that it should be used as a corona prophylactic, but definitely should be used as a corona treatment. I really think that the reason Dr. Fauci isn't promoting this is because, you know, the lobbyists, big pharma lobbyists, are telling him not to until that they can get a drug, patented drug, out on the market in order to capitalize on the illness.
Yeah, Mark, very good point. Thank you. And I'm going to let you go and finish. And then also to continue that point, I want to hammer home, this is very important to understand. I mean, I give you a lot of information, but this is going to affect our futures. Bill Gates and Dr. Fauci and others who are leading this charge about the mitigation are cheerleaders for a vaccination. That's different than hydrochloroquine. It's a treatment, maybe prophylactic, but maybe. I mean, again, there are no scientific studies. I'm not saying there are, but it looks anecdotally, yes, Dr. Fauci's right, that it's working on a lot of people. So why not try it, given it's been used for decades, as Mark just described. So, but what they want to do is develop a vaccine like smallpox, like measles, so that your children and you and me would all have to get this vaccine in order to be able to work, to go to school, to do whatever. It's kind of like a thing you'd have to have in order to get along, to do anything in this world, to do business and live. And that's dangerous. I actually pulled the clip of Attorney General Barr discussing with Laura Ingraham last night how concerned he was about that. We can't do that. We can't allow forcing our people to have some kind of a certificate in order to do business here in this country. It's very dangerous. And that's really what they're pushing for. That's what Fauci's pushing for. And I think that's the reason he doesn't want hydrochloroquine to get the attention here. But still, let me say again, he is at the same time telling us that his protocols for staying home and staying 6 feet apart and wearing a mask and not, you know, gathering with more than groups of 10. Who says 10? Why not 11? Why not 9? But all those protocols, he's sure that's what's made the difference, but not hydrochloroquine. When hospitals like in New York City are giving it out to patients left and right who qualify and are having great results. But it's not because of that. But he's sure it's because of social distancing. There's a problem there. Do you not see the breakdown in common sense? He's either doesn't have common sense or he's doing this purposely, and I don't know what the answer to that is. Let's go to Joan in Texas. Good morning, Joan.
Oh, good morning, Sandy. Thank you so much for taking my call. You know what? I don't even listen to the rest, anything else in the media but you, because it's amazing to me how you're always the first. Lots of good information.
First, thank you, Joan.
You're welcome. Thank you. If people would consider Bill Gates's attitude as sort of like the mark of the beast, can't do anything without it. But, you know, I was a registered nurse in an elementary school for about 8 years and loved it, totally loved it. It's amazing what we do to our children for all of this propaganda, I would say. But I don't know how many people remember the HPV vaccine, human papillomavirus, that caused the state of Texas, who I love Texas and I love the leadership, but they got caught in with that type of gibberish we're hearing now. And they passed a law, a requirement that said all children had to have that, all the females had to have the HPV vaccine.
Yes.
In the fifth grade. Okay, so none of these mothers even thought about what it was. All they knew is it was required. And I had a beautiful Muslim lady that she was actually my clinic assistant. She said, what is that for? And I said, oh, Angie, it's to simplify it. It's sort of like giving your children permission to have promiscuous sex because it'll protect you if you get exposed to the human papillomavirus. Well, it made her sick because it was already done. And then, of course, the state of Texas rescinded that whole thing. But for a while, that pharmaceutical company made a ton of money off a little requirement. They made a lot of money when the state of Texas passed a ruling that said all schools had to have at least 2 albuterol injections on hand, because most of these kids can't afford that. Well, immediately, the albuterol went up to $600 an injection because the schools were having to pay for it. If the general public would look and see how closely related Dr. Fauci is with the World Health, the National Institute, the Bill Gates Foundation, he was on the board, probably still is. In our section of society, that's considered a conflict of interest. But for those people, it's brilliant and noble. I don't understand. I understand people doing things for money. I don't, like you say, my great concern is that we, the people, are not hanging in there and saying, not on my watch. I'm a great grandmother and I love my grandchildren, my children and their children. How dare we allow totally unknown, without even check. We would check somebody who's going to clean our house more closely than somebody that's running our country and indeed in the world, because there's also a lot of little connections all over. And I think God is using Holy Week to pull back the curtain. I'm praying for wisdom. I'm not sure the leaders are still... There's still hope for them, but wisdom for we the people, Sandy. This is Holy Week, when a man of mighty authority laid down his life for us. He would rather die for us than live without us. Isn't that wonderful? Oh, we need to be asking him for the wisdom and the light to see what needs to be done.
Joan, beautiful. Yeah, you're just so welcome. I didn't want to interrupt you because I loved what you were saying and the spirit in which you were saying it. Thanks so much. By the way, be sure and tune in tomorrow when we do our Easter special, because we tie it into what's happening now, but it's a very, I think, worshipful program, and I think you will enjoy it. Joan is right. She's just right about a lot of things. I want to read this quickly from Tony. Sweet, sweet, sweet. She says, you're my favorite radio host. Very kind thing. She listens all the time. She says she has great respect. But she says, you seem to question the validity of the seriousness of this virus and almost encourage us to see it as a hoax. My husband works in one of those hospitals filled to capacity, having to transfer COVID patients because of lack of space while they continue to expand. Every person who takes this lightly puts these people, their families, and their communities at risk. You stated deaths are less than the models project. Please consider that could be a result of successful mitigation efforts that must continue to keep the numbers down. And so She says a lot more things. She says, I care about the economy, but this is consistent. Is this consistent with the pro-life perspective? And I'm going to stop with that. Tony, lots of things. First of all, I wish you'd said where your husband is, where he is and what hospital, because you know that the stories are different from around the country. And as you heard me say already this morning, I do not think that the coronavirus is a hoax, but I think the numbers and the people leading the charge to fight it are perpetrating a hoax on us with the requirements they're placing on us. And I do know that the media is perpetrating a hoax in how they're reporting it. I believe that Governor Cuomo has done his part to whip up the frenzy in New York. Candace Owen was just commenting yesterday that she lives in New York, and she talks about the number of deaths that happened in New York anyway. There are deaths. There are just plain deaths everywhere. We cannot prevent death. We know that coronavirus, it can be very deadly for some, but that most of the people that get it just have mild symptoms and get over it. And yet we are shutting down the entire government over this. And when it comes to life, Tony, you have to realize that when you cause 10 million people to lose their jobs, there are likely going to be some serious consequences, all the way from depression to suicides. There are stats about suicides. There are going to be domestic abuses, children abused. When an economy shrinks, there cannot be medical advances. There cannot be strong hospitals. There cannot be these great medicines. It's just not as simple as we close everything down and stop working to save the patients who have COVID-19. We have to think more broadly than that, and that's the point I would make to you in more detail if I had the time. All right, I've already talked too much. I want to talk to Barb in North Carolina. Good morning, Barb.
Hey, good morning, Sandy.
What's on your mind?
Just wanted to give you a little background on Dr. Fauci. WikiLeaks has a whole bunch of the emails that they captured from Hillary Clinton. One of them was a foreword. It was originated with Dr. Fauci, went to Cheryl Mills, and then she forwarded it to Hillary. And it goes back to January 23rd of 2013, when Hillary was testifying in front of the House and Congress on Benghazi. And when she forwarded it, Cheryl Mills said, "This is from your doctor admirer." And the subject of it was today's performance, which when you're in front of Congress, I don't think you typically are giving a performance. But he said that pass on to Hillary that she knocked it out of the park and that we love you and we just admire you. So he is a big, you know, Democratic person going way, way back. And yeah, he stands to lose his place in the limelight if the coronavirus goes away and we don't have the daily press conferences that we seem to be having every day, which I appreciate because we get great information.
Yes, Barb, excellent. I'm going to have to go because of the time. But yeah, thank you for bringing that up about WikiLeaks. That we learned a lot from that. And I also would point out that Dr. Fauci won a Medal of Honor from George W. Bush for his oversight of how came to whatever protocols we had on HIV/AIDS. And those protocols, as I remember, were that there were no protections from the rest of us, from people who were HIV positive. Dentists had to work on them, even though we knew that that deadly illness was transmitted by body fluids. We were not allowed to know who had the disease. There were all kinds of things to protect, especially the gay community. And Dr. Anthony Fauci oversaw all of that. So I think it would be true that he is not, he has a different point of view than the rest of us. Maybe he could do that and still handle this well, but I just am not seeing that, and I am concerned. Nevertheless, do be careful, and we'll talk. Be sure and listen tomorrow, please, because it is Easter weekend. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.